Okay, for part three of our Tosefta Shabbos discussion, hopefully to complete the discussion. So we had been talking about what are the purposes and the structures that are associated with Tosefta Shabbos. And we had reflected upon the fact that the Torah tells us that we should fast on the 9th of Tishrei, and the Gemara picks up on the question that that date does not seem to be accurate, because Yom Kippur is the 10th of Tishrei. So even though there's a different answer elsewhere in Shas, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that the issue is, this is to teach us Tosefta Shabbos, or at least Tosefta Kedusha, Mosif Michalah HaKodesh, and that question of whether it's Shabbos or Kedusha in general, it's important because the Rambam seems to only record a concept of Tosefta's Yom HaKippurim, and even within Yom Kippur only Tosefta's Inui, while most other Rishonim seem to agree to a concept of Tosefta's everything Min HaTorah. And then we talked about two different perspectives as to what that Tosefta's is and what it accomplishes, either what we call the ambitious school, that you are actually creating Shabbos / Yom Tov, and that you actually have that power, in which case we could understand probably why it is that it is a expression of desire for Kedusha, that we don't just wait for Kedusha, but we actively welcome it. Or a second perspective, that it is a act, we're kind of pretending that it's Shabbos. It's not really Shabbos at all, but we're abstaining from Malacha during that time, which we could explain based on the Medrash that it's probably maybe a siag, so that we shouldn't come to violate Shabbos. We should create a buffer zone between when we bring in Shabbos and when it actually starts. And that is still consistent with the idea of it being Daraisa, because there is a concept, as Rabbi Yosef Engel has displayed, of a mitzvah Daraisa being a siag, which we spoke about in some more length last time. And then we started to raise the question beyond this, so what difference does it make? So is Shabbos, it isn't Shabbos, is it just a question of how spiritual you feel, or does it have any practical ramifications? So we started to look at some examples about how it does make a difference, or how it could make a difference. The question essentially addressing the issue of, what about positive aspects of the day? Can that be fulfilled during that time? And we saw that that seemed to be two opinions in Tosfos in Psachim about whether you can fulfill Suda Shabbos during the time of Tosefta's, and that that bears itself out in two opinions in the Taz and the Maharshal. The Taz saying you actually are switching the day and therefore you can have your Shabbos Suda, and the Maharshal saying no, you can't have your Shabbos Suda because it's an extension from Malacha, but it's not actually Shabbos yet. And as we noted, even though it's not clear in the language of the Taz, presumably what he means is not that, presumably what the Maharshal would mean is not that you have to wait to start. You could probably start your Suda early, but you would have to have a kezias of bread after dark in order to fulfill Suda Shabbos as well, which is in contrast to his position when it comes to Shemini Atzeres. The Shemini Atzeres night, he has a chumrah which would seem to require us not to even start the meal until fully dark, because of the question of how would we deal with the confusion between Shemini Atzeres and Sukkos. According to the Maharshal, we're going to have a problem, because if we bring in Shemini Atzeres early, which we should do, but if we eat right away, so then we're not going to know how to treat the Sukkos situation, because if it's Sukkos, we should be eating in a Sukkah with a bracha, but if it's Shemini Atzeres, then we should eat in a Sukkah without a bracha, it sounds like, from the Gemara. So how would we handle it? So says the Maharshal, don't get involved, don't eat then. And the Taz great length took issue with this, and the Taz says no, it's not a confusion, there's no question about what's going on. It's very easy, you brought in Shemini Atzeres and therefore you're following Shemini Atzeres rules, so it's not an issue, and you don't have to worry about their question, you just follow Shemini Atzeres. So that Machlokas parallels the story, seems to be the same issue yet again. And
why wouldn't they make this very big difference for Shabbos and Yom Tov? There's no comparison.
Okay.
One is beyond Klal Yisrael, the other one's HaKadosh Baruch Hu determines.
Right, so that in general, if I would say Makadosh Yisrael v'Hazmanim, as opposed to Makadosh HaShabbos, because Shabbos is always going to be Saturday no matter what, and Yom Tov we have some role in because we can affect the Kiddush HaKodesh. So that that itself is an interesting aspect that's hard to know if it really makes so much of a difference, especially if you're not the Rambam. If you're the Rambam, maybe it makes more of a difference because he is distinguishing at least between Yom Kippur and Shabbos, although he's not necessarily distinguishing from the Adi Yom Tovim. But according to other Rishonim that seem to see it all as one source and one idea, it's harder to distinguish. If we had more, you know, if we had a source saying that it's true when it comes to Yom Tov and it's not true when it comes to Shabbos, then we could maybe explain it based on that. But take suggests, and we don't have separate sources for the din, that there is a distinction, it's a little harder. But so that's a question that seems to rage between at least the Taz and the Maharshal and others, and it shows up in at least one more place, probably more than that, but at least one more place, and that is here source number 8. And source number 8, Dr. Goldstein and I discussed about how we could put it in. So putting it from the Magen Avraham, it's easier, but the Taz says the same thing. So the Magen Avraham will advocate the shared position between him and the Taz for the source. It has to do with Shavuos. And when it comes to Shavuos, there is a widespread Minhag Klal Yisrael, which is not 100% shared by everyone, but it is a very widespread practice, to not even daven early. Right? So as we mentioned, there's a quirk. Every Yontif has something different about it. So here now Shavuos is, we moved up another edge. So when it came to Shabbos, Marshall says, apparently, continue your Suda into dark. When it comes to Shmini Atzeres, he says, don't start your Suda until after dark. And now when it comes to Sukkot, we have practice not even to, when it comes to Shavuos, we practice not even to daven until after dark. So what's going on? What happens with Shavuos? So here the position seems to be, not the only explanation, as we'll discuss in a second, but the explanation that the Magen Avraham and the Taz both agree to is that it's a concern with Sfiras HaOmer. That if you have your Shavuos start early, that will cut into Sfira, and that will be a violation of Sheva Shabbosos Tumimos. The Torah tells us to count 7 complete weeks going into Sfira, and it's not going to be complete. You're going to chop off the last hour. 7 weeks of work, you're going to miss the last hour because you chopped it off to bring Shavuos in, let's say, an hour early. So this seems to be the flip side of their position. Until now, the Taz is basically being the more lenient one, allowing us to eat early. It's always a cherished leniency, but here he's the one who is now being more machmir. He's telling us that we can't bring in Shavuos early because that's going to be a problem in terms of our sphere. And he doesn't quote the Maharshal on this point, but we can assume that the Maharshal would not agree with that, because there's no reason for him to agree with that. That if he does not think you're actually changing the day, it's just about abstaining from malacha, so why in the world should that affect my sphira? So I'll stop malacha an hour before the end of sphira. So with tons of time during sphira when I'm not going to be doing malacha, it's not going to cut into my count. There's no statement being made about sphira by doing that. So if one follows the view of the Maharshal, it would seem to be that there's no need for this chumrah, while the position of the Taz, and you see the Magen Avraham here also, that's in the context, it's in that context that we can see it make sense. So that seems to be a third reflection of this position. While we're on that topic, we'll mention that there are other explanations of why this minhag developed. For example, the Netziv in his commentary to Chumash, so he suggests that it's based on the Pasuk in Parshas Emor, that in the context of Shavuos, the Torah has a language something like, we cross him, Be'etzem hayom hazeh mikra kodesh, that you shall declare this day a mikra kodesh, Be'etzem hayom hazeh. And as we mentioned last time or the time before, that the language of Etzem, the Gemara has used that phrase to identify the day without Tosefos. So that's why, for example, if you eat on Yom Kippur, so you're only Chayav Karis if you eat on Yom Kippur itself, not during Tosefos. So therefore, says the Netziv, what apparently the Torah is telling us is that the Mikra Kodesh, the declaration of Kodesh, of Shavuos, whether it's in Tefillah or whether it's in Kiddush, seems to be that Kriyas Kodesh should take place Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, should take place on the day itself, not during a time of Tosefos. So if that's
the says Kiddush, just
right. So then the question is, how are we understanding the Krasim Kodesh, and when do you fulfill Kiddush? So is Kiddush the Kiddush at the meal, or is Kiddush the Kiddush at Tefillah? Even if you don't make Kiddush in Shul, Tefillah itself might be Kiddush, but the Magen Avraham might mean Kiddush at the meal. But either way, that the bringing in of the Kiddushah, so the whole discussion, what exactly the Chumash is based on, it's going to depend a little bit on how you're understanding. But this notion of not bringing in Shavuos early on some level, so the Netziv attributes it to that pasuk, that the idea of the Mikra Kodesh should be taking place specifically during the day itself, not during a time of Tosefos. And has been pointed out, Rav Harfenis has a tshuva about this in his Rav Yisrael David Harfenis, who we'll mention again in a few minutes, hopefully, has a number of fascinating svarim. He has a number of tshuvas on Shabbos called Mishmas Shabbos, many, many volumes, keeps coming out more. But he also has a tshuvas called Mikdash Yisrael, and each volume is on about a different yantiv. So he has a volume on Shavuos. So this was before anyone ever wrote a sefer on all about Shavuos. And he has in that sefer, so he talks about nafkamina between those two explanations. Is what about the second night of Shavuos? According to the Nesiv, he would say you probably shouldn't start early on the second night either, because it should parallel the first night. So therefore, the Kriyas Kodesh of the second night should presumably follow the same pattern. But if the idea is that it's about cutting into spheres, that's not relevant anymore the second night, which indeed our practice is not to worry about it the second night. So that seems to reflect that possible distinction. He also mentions in that tshuva of Harfenes a more exotic explanation of this idea, and this is based on Rashi in the beginning of Shas, the second Rashi in Shas, in the beginning of Brachos, discusses, has a whole fight with Tosfos and other Rishonim, but how is it that we daven in shul early, ever, when that means that we're going to say Kriya Shema at a time when it's not time yet, it's too early to say Kriya Shema. So many different views in Rishonim how we deal with that, but Rashi's position is, well, when you go home at night and then when you say Kriya Shema Lamita, that's when you will fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So some noted that it's not going to work Shavuos night because if people are staying up all night, so then we can't rely on the fact that people will ultimately say Kriya Shema Lamita, so therefore the shul shouldn't daven early because they have to worry that people are going to say Kriya Shema on time. It's an unusual approach to this issue, but that's just while we're on that subject, that's another explanation. So this provokes a question, the first explanation, that it's an issue of cutting off sphere, which is the most commonly known explanation. So the whole topic, the whole practice, raises the question that, as far as we know, we have a mitzvah in the Torah to do Tosefes Yontif for every Yontif. And it doesn't say anywhere in Shas that Shavuos is an exception. So if you like the Rambam, you don't believe it about everything, or it's not, he doesn't say it about everything. Okay, so then there's what to talk about. But according to other Rishonim, that there's a Tosefis by every Yontif, and there's no distinction made in Shas about Shavuos. So what right do we have, whenever the start is not clear, but the Magen Avraham Taz are writing relatively late in the game, to institute a Chumrah that's going to negate a Din Min HaTorah? What about the Mitzvah Min HaTorah of Tosefis Shavuos? That's a tricky thing. So some suggest, for example, Moshe Sternbach has an essay along these lines, and it's perhaps the most common approach, that Shavuos is different because Shavuos doesn't have a date in the Torah. There's no date that is officially Shavuos. Nowadays it's pinned to one day, but when we were being Mekadesh Alpi Hariyah, it could have been any of three dates. And it's not just a question of the fact that it could fluctuate, but that the date is not inherently significant. It's not like the Torah says, look at the context of Sukkot or Pesach, 15th of Tishrei, the 15th of Nisan. But the whole incidence of Shavuos is following 7 weeks of Sfira. First you have Pesach, you count 7 weeks of Sfira, and then you have Shavuos. So perhaps one could argue that it's functionally impossible to have Shavuos until you finish your Sfira. You have to have your complete count, and that's going to take you up until dark. And then after that, then you could bring in Shavuos. And maybe that's how we could account for a difference from this Yontif to everything else. It's simply not a functional possibility because it's contingent on completing Shavuos. Parenthetically, there is a fascinating psak of the Lubavitcher Rebbe which reflects just how far this can go. This is recorded in his Chidush Mabira Malashas, and I've been told that this actually is the practice in Lubavitch to follow this psak, a very surprising idea, that Lubavitcher Rebbe writes that if one crosses the international date line during Sfiras Omer and then comes back and he ends up losing a day, so he should count his own Sfira, he should count still based on his own perception of time, because the Torah says Svartam Lachem, that Sfira is a personal obligation, so even the fact that he's out of sync with everybody in his neighborhood shouldn't matter. So far already that's surprising enough. But then he goes on to say, and then as a consequence of that, he's going to observe his own Shavuos, because since Shavuos is contingent upon finishing Sfira first, so then he's going to observe Shavuos based on when he finished the Sfira. It's an unbelievable thing. We can read it to the Chiddush and Biur Malashas in the first volume, and I was told that this psak is observed. Very striking idea, which would show just how much they're tied into each other. So maybe that could theoretically explain why there wouldn't be any Tosefis. While there are others who suggest that we can really accomplish both, that it, maybe there is a recognition of both components of Tosefes, as we've been discussing, that you can abstain from Malacha early, and you'll fulfill the Mitzvah Min HaTorah of Tosefes, at least according to those who believe that that's what it's about. So before you go to Shul, you can stop doing Malacha, whatever, a half hour before. And then, when you daven, then you'll sanctify the day, so to speak. So you won't bring in the Kedusha Shavuos, or you won't call the Kedusha Shavuos as having started any earlier. But you'll still be fulfilling the Mitzvah HaTorah of Tosefes if you believe that that's about abstaining from Malacha. So you could, in theory, at least within some parameters, have some type of a compromise on this issue and observe the minig of not davening until late, but at the same time have some degree of Tosefes. It's possible to somehow split the difference if you are aware enough of the different components.
The Queen Rosh Jumblach was a very interesting approach that just follows Pesach.
Right.
No one else follows that hadracha. No one else.
Well, there probably are others who explain that way. I think that there are a few other attempts to square these two ideas. So that's probably the most compelling of the approach.
And how do you deal with the fact that Mitzvah Sayyum Kukulo, it doesn't fall into the category?
So Mitzvah Sayyum Kukulo, in terms of how would it help us here? It happens to be that in practice, even though the Gemara entertains other possibilities, in practice we only talk about Mitzvah Sayyum Kukulo by bad things. So by Avelus and by Tumah, by things that we want to shrink. So on the other end, so then the seventh day of Shiva, so that would say Mitzvah Sayyum Kukulo, on the last day of Tumah, by things that we want to get rid of. In practice, we don't apply it to Shabbos and Yantif, even though, again, the Gemara does consider another possibility. That's the way we understand it nowadays. Certainly not the other direction, because if we were saying that, then we'd be saying that every error of Shabbos and Yantif is Shabbos and Yantif, because we'll have a little bit of it going in that direction. So it doesn't seem to have much of a role here. But I guess what you're saying is that the last day of Sfira, a little bit of counting should count for the whole thing. So the truth is, there is, you could say also, what does it mean to finish your Sfira? That you counted it the night before anyway. So we'll have the fact that you're observing, Yantif in the middle, how should that make a difference?
So maybe then the 7 weeks also, because Shamlo's explanation is really interesting, because maybe that 7 weeks represents like a, each day is like a tahara, like when you give a korban, so you have to wait a full day. Most things you don't have to wait a full day. When you give a korban to be tahara, you have to wait. So maybe that 7 weeks to get the matan Torah, maybe each day represents like a
part of the process. Tahara. It's like 7 weeks instead of 7 days.
Right.
Could be, certainly, yeah. I'm sure Alpi Derech HaShkafi would definitely find people who would agree with that explanation. It definitely could be. Okay, so this could affect a few other points. So just to mention a few others and then see if we can get some of the quirks of the various symptoms that they're all and show how they're all different. The truth is, actually, we'll just mention one point that you raised the other day on the phone. So Mr. Olinsky has suggested that maybe there is a model that Shabbos is about the Chetz of Shabbos, and when you bring it in early, it's about the Gavra of Shabbos, something along those lines. So I just had alluded to at the time that there is such an idea that Rav Zevin had expressed. So just to flesh out what I was talking about, there is a Machlokas HaRishonim about the following issue, but the Rashba takes this shita that if somebody brings in Shabbos early, so let's say he wants some halacha done, and he has a neighbor who's a Jewish person who has not brought in Shabbos early. So should we say that there is a concept of Amirali Yisrael, that on Shabbos itself he can't ask a non-Jew to do malacha for him, but what if it's not Shabbos yet and he wants to ask a Jew to do malacha for him? So is he allowed to do that? So that was my focus between the Rashba and others, the Ran talks about, but just to focus on the Rashba's position, which many of the commentaries discussed. So the Rashba was of the opinion that that's mutter, the raya from the Gemara, that that should be okay, that you're allowed to ask another Jew to do malacha for you, even though from your perspective it's Shabbos. So that there's a lot of discussion about. And it was brought up in the context of an essay by Rav Zevin in Lor HaHalacha, fascinating sefer in general, but he talks about Shabbos. He has an essay about Shabbos, and he touches upon a question about how do we relate to Shabbos. Do we relate to it as an obligation that we should be at rest, which is the way most of the Achronim dealt with it? Rav Zevin's approach is different than a lot of the Achronim. Or do we believe that Shabbos there should be an existence of rest in general, that it's not just about us being at rest, but that there should be an atmosphere of menucha? So, for example, the fact that there's a halacha of Amir al-Akum, you're not allowed to have an Anju do malacha for you. So many of those who disagreed with Rezevin, who said that Shabbos is about your being at rest, so they noted that Amir al-Akum is a din d'rabbanan, that min ha-Torah, there is no problem with your having a Anju do malacha for you, because it's not about having malacha not happen. It's about your being physically at rest, and that's why the Chassam Sofer explains in the Tshuva there's no concept of shlichus by Shabbos. Even if there was a concept of shlichus with non-Jew, the concept doesn't exist when it comes to Shabbos, because Shabbos is not about not having malacha happen. It's about your personally not doing malacha. So if you are physically at rest, that would be a fulfillment of Shabbos, even if things were happening at your instruction. So that's the view that many Achronim took of this. If Engel has a position like that, and some Sofer and others, but Rav Zevin has a whole essay where he says that that's not true. He thinks it's about not having malacha happen, and that the fact that we have a din of Amir Lachum, even Drabanan, is really proof of that. The same proof brought in both directions. Others will say, anytime you have a din Drabanan, you find that it's a flexible proof, because one camp will say, oh, it shows it's only Drabanan, it's not really reflective of the spirit, and the other camp will say, oh, the fact that Chazal made a din Drabanan shows you that it is reflective of the spirit. So Drabanan and Dinim are very useful for whatever point you want to prove. So here too you find that, so that the other Achronim will say the fact that it's Mutter Minat Torah shows you that that Shabbos doesn't really involve that, and Rezevin will say the opposite. He says the fact that Chazal said that, it's because it shows that there is such a concern that there shouldn't be Malacha happening. So he discusses towards the end of his essay, so what about the Rashba? So how come the Rashba during the time of Tosefah Shabbos says you could ask somebody else to do Malacha for you? He says that's exactly why, because it's Tosefos. That's a whole different category along the lines of what you were saying. That Shabbos, when we say that there's an issue of Shabbos having its own nature to it, that's on real Shabbos. It's when it really is Shabbos. So then there is a notion that there, we should not even have Malacha happening. But when you are bringing in Shabbos yourself, it's Tosefos. So then that is a din in the Gabra. That is just a din that you should be at rest. So during that time, before you bring in Shabbos, so then it's a personal concept. Once Shabbos actually starts, so then we extend the idea of Amir al-Akum, because then we have this notion that Shabbos should be a situation of rest, not just in terms of you physically, but in terms of anything that you're creating. So this that's a reflection, I think, of that structure that you suggested, that maybe Shabbos itself has one character to it, but when you bring in Shabbos yourself personally, so then that is a idea that's a personal type of Tosef for Shabbos.
And it can connect it also to Shemitah.
Possibly, yeah. So the Gemara connects to the Tosef for Shemitah, so the understanding seems to have a lot of parallels to it.
So Rav Zevin's explanation on this would be, wouldn't fit with the first, oh, I forgot who was, Marshall, that says that there's a chalos in the yom.
Right, so the Marshall says there isn't ever, but the Tazer says that there is.
The chalos in the yom couldn't be a gavra, it would have to be a chepsa.
Right, unless you want to, you could probably squeeze the two in the middle, which we're going to discuss in a second, how you could maybe look at things differently. But, by the way we've seen the Taz, probably not, he would probably not agree with it. But as we're about to see now, there is a view in the Taz which seems to surprise us, which we'll just try to go through quickly. What would you say about the following question? I think this was alluded to in our previous discussions, I don't remember. Let's say you bring in Shabbos, and you realize that that was probably a mistake, because you're sitting at work in front of your computer an hour away from home. It was probably not a great idea to bring in Shabbos. You'd probably wait till you get home before bringing in Shabbos. So what do you do now? So is there a concept of undoing it? Is it reversible? Can you, let's say you happen to luckily have a Beis Din that meets in your office building, can you go to a Beis Din and say you want to have a Hataris Nadarim for your bringing in Shabbos? So that was a machlokas haposkim. There were those who thought, no, you're in trouble now. And there were others who thought, yeah, this is a Lavush, for example, that this is reversible, that this is something you can have a Hataris Nadarim for. So it seems to be, as the latest farm developed, that this is an issue of, what's going on? Did you actually bring in Shabbos completely? So now it's like trying to make Havdalah Shabbos morning so you can take a break, run out to the store and get something and come back. Clearly that doesn't work. Or do we say, no, it's not Shabbos. You made a personal commitment now to abstain from Malacha. It was about your behavior. You decided that your practice is going to be to abstain from Malacha. So okay, it's like a neder basically. Maybe you can undo the neder with the proper circumstances. So I would have thought, it's not totally compelling, apparently, especially so, but I would have thought that the Taz would be in the camp that says it's undoable. You've brought in Shabbos fully, so therefore it shouldn't be reversible. So the surprising thing is, and you can read it inside, we're not going to look inside now, but I'll just discuss it. So this source number 10, the Taz basically seems to take a different view in the case. It's relevant this year, next year. We have a bunch of situations when we're going to have a Thursday, Friday Rosh Hashanah, as we did this past year, what was this coming year. So the Taz discusses such a situation when there was a town that had a very depressing Rosh Hashanah because their shofar was stolen. So they couldn't blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. So Thursday they didn't blow shofar, Friday they didn't blow shofar. Friday afternoon they already said, you know, Tech Lashana Vakilo Seah, so already 2 days into the year we want to cut things short already, but it's so depressing, let's bring in Shabbos. So they brought in Shabbos Friday afternoon. And 2 minutes after they bring in Shabbos, the Pony Express shows up and says, guess what? You found the shofar, you still have 45 minutes left, you can still blow a shofar. So what should you do? So the Taz assumes that the whole Kabbalah Shabbos was a mistake, that it's clearly undone, that it was an error, you don't even need any process because it's so obvious, you can rely on the fact that they would never have accepted Shabbos under those circumstances, so that's okay. And he says, you can't even do it to Mevatel Mitzvah, he wouldn't even have let you if he'd noticed what was going to happen. So the Taz allows it to be undone. So that's surprising, it's not what we would have expected, so you have to have a more nuanced understanding of what he's saying, that apparently it's you have the ability to totally bring in Shabbos, but it's still a function of your personal commitment, and it's still reversible under the right circumstances. He himself, if you want to read inside, he says, you might ask on me based on my position, so he might, doesn't seem consistent with what I'm saying, and he has an explanation. He's focusing on a little bit of a different detail than what we're talking about, but he does, in the course of his discussion, say that you might be surprised I'm saying this, and he talks about why it could be a little different. So this could have impact on something else. Just to quickly note, the earlier source here, we have source 5, Tosfos and Seches Ksubos, that the whole question of when you bring in Yantif early, so what happens? So Tosfos and Ksubos talks about, basically by implication, the following question, that we know that there's a prohibition to get married on Yantif. So on Chol Hamoed Sukkos, you're not allowed to get married. That most of the Rishonim understand is the Din Min HaTorah. Derived from a pasuk "Sanachta b'chagecha v'lo b'ishtecha." So it's a little surprising, but it's more of a problem to get married on Chol Hamoed Sukkos than it is to get married on Shabbos. Shabbos is only an issur d'rabbanan. To get married on Chol Hamoed is an issur d'oraisa of the "Sanachta b'chagecha." So what about the time of Tosefes? So because of the need to explain the line of the Gemara, Tosfos and Ksubos in source 5 seems to have two opinions, apparently machlokas within Tosfos, whether or not you can get married within the time of Tosefes Yontif. And it seems to be that the issue is that if you maintain that you have fully brought in Yontif, so then Simchas Yontif is in effect, and you can't contradict Simchas Yontif with a personal simcha of the wedding. But if you believe that it's not really Yontif, so then there's no character of simcha to that time, there's just an abstaining from malacha. So then, that's not going to interfere with if you're getting married. It happens to be an issur d'rabbanan to get married during a time when there's an issur malacha. That would be a different issue, but it's not going to be a ma'arvim b'simcha b'simcha min ha-Torah issue. So that question of the simcha, that flips things a little bit, because until now we've been talking about positive mitzvahs, whether or not they come in. So here is a positive aspect of simcha that creates an issur. It creates an issur of getting married. So it's a little bit of a different model. So this is the subtext of the tshuva the Netziv has. That's source number 9 here, that Netziv discusses an issue which draws on both the points we just mentioned. Now, what happens if you have a woman who lit candles and brought in Yantif? And right after she did that, so she received a notification that a relative of hers had passed away and was already buried. So the question is that if it's really Yantif, so if this, you get such news on Yantif, or if somebody passes away, let's say the first days of Yantif and the funeral is on Chol Hamoed, so then Shiva waits until after Yantif. It might mean waiting a week. And then
you say a woman, not a man who said the...
Because that's the case he talked about, and also because it was about lighting candles, so it seems to be easier. But in theory, it could be anybody. Right, so it happens to be the model he's talking about, a woman who lit candles, and it gets into the whole discussion of what the significance of lighting candles is, but theoretically we could be talking about a man.
And the man would have to damar, or just say l'chol rana?
So l'chol rana is probably the way we've associated with it, but as he goes into the whole thing, that really none of these things are automatically associated with Kabbalah Shabbos. In practice, the things that we do that we connect to Kabbalah Shabbos have that connotation. So in this case, it's lighting candles for her. So she lit candles, and she got this notification afterwards. So if it was, let's say this happened on real Yontif, so you'd wait till after Yontif. Maybe that means waiting a week, and then there's a full shiva afterwards. While if somebody gets this news an hour before Yontif, so then they could sit shiva for an hour, and then Yontif negates it, and then there's no shiva at all afterwards. So it's a huge difference. An hour shiva now, and that's it. Or a full shiva a week later. Radical, radical difference between the two understandings. So what's going on here? Do we say that it really is Yontif? She brought in Yontif and it's official, so now she has to wait until afterwards? Or do we say no, that it's not really Yontif, and that when Yontif actually comes in, that's when the Simchas Yontif, which is what negates the Avelis, will come in, and then that will negate it? So this really depends on a couple of things. It depends on the whole Lundish explanation we just said, but and the Nativ talks about that. But you could also briefly, but you could also look at it from a different angle. The point we just mentioned, whether maybe it's reversible. Maybe he's working off the assumption, which nowadays I think people would really look at it differently. People find this very difficult to have a situation where shiva is cut off for such a brief experience. People want to have a full shiva, but there is a mentality the other direction also, especially because the Gemara says Sofik Avelis L'Hakel. So he's assuming that you want the shorter shiva, so then maybe there could be an undoing of the acceptance of Yontif. So he discusses both angles. One, whether we could say that the acceptance should not be effective, or that even if it is effective, then maybe the Simchas Yontif comes in on a separate track, and then that allows for shiva to be observed first, and then for Yontif to actually bring in Simcha when it actually comes in, and to negate Avelis that way. So just to quickly mention, so every Yontif has its own aspects. We saw Shavuos, we saw Shmini Atzeres. Yom Kippur is the source for everything. Rosh Hashanah and Pesach have its own concerns also. I guess we won't have the opportunity to talk about it at great length, but just because Pesach, we're talking about Pesachim, so Pesach is how we started the whole point. So when it comes to Pesach, so Tosfos raises the issue that even according to the opinion that it's fully Shabbos, and even according to the view that you can have your Suda Shabbos, you still can't have your Seder early. That's why the Mishnah says Ad Shetechshach, because the requirement of Matzah. That Matzah requires night because it's connected to the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach says Laila. And so Pesach, it could be Pesach, it could be 1000% Pesach when you bring it in. Still not Pesach night. It's like the next morning, if you want to eat Matzah in the morning, it's fully Pesach according to everybody. But it's not Pesach night. And therefore, that's a problem. You're not going to be able to bring it in early. So maybe you might think, okay, but let me hop around a few minutes. I can still make Kiddush and sing a little bit and then wash. So it's not in Tosafot, but the latest farm say that doesn't work either. That even Kiddush you can't do during the time of Tosafot, because Kiddush requires Kiddush has an issue. So what's the issue? So one perspective is the Dalet Kosos issue, and then that seems to suggest that Dalet Kosos is also tied in to Matzah and everything else, which would have a chumrah on the other side. It would mean that you're not allowed to have your last two kosos after chatzos, because that should have the same limitation. Rabbi Sachs talks about this in his Sefer HaMitzvachim. But there's another explanation, a fascinating view that the Taz once again has, but not necessarily connected to all his views here. But the Taz says, it's a fascinating concept, it's also a Pesachim topic, that it's an issue of Kiddush Mokum Suda. That apparently it's not just a physical location issue, it's a temporal issue also. That if we say that Matzah has to have night, so therefore the Suda of Pesach, in contrast to everything else, has to be actual Laila. So you can't make the Kiddush for the Suda during a time when the Suda could not be eaten. So it's a Kiddush Mokum Suda in a temporal sense. It's in the wrong time zone. It's a very Mechudish understanding of what Kiddush Mokum Suda
is. But it would not say that it's about.
That's right. So it wouldn't apply to Shabbos, because Shabbos you can't have your meal early, certainly according to the Taz himself. It's a unique to Pesach issue. And then, as Rabbi Sachs discussed this, so then that wouldn't necessarily affect the other two kosos. Then you could have the last two kosos after Chatzos, because it's not about connecting the kosos to the matzah. According to the first explanation, it's about assuming Dalet Kosos are also a part of the story, so it should apply on both ends. But according to this, you would have a different point. And we'll just throw in the fact, say less than 10 seconds, that the court for Rosh Hashanah, so we can at least complete the set, that the court for Rosh Hashanah is, as a Maharil quotes a view that you shouldn't start Rosh Hashanah early, you shouldn't eat early. It's not clear, he says himself, so it's not clear why it's about eating rather than davening, but you shouldn't eat early on Rosh Hashanah night, so you shouldn't add to Yom HaDin. So a lot of questions about that, so we'll just throw it out there in terms of what that represents. Maybe we'll have an opportunity in the future to talk about it in more length. But that also, if you want to think about it, you see that that also draws on certain ideas of what's happening. So if you bring Rosh Hashanah early, are you actually bringing more din into the world somehow? Are you somehow changing the character of the din just because you're going to daven early on Erev Rosh Hashanah? So that certainly ties into a lot of the ideas that we talked about while having its own...
That the model is Yom Kippur.
Right, so Yom Kippur, you have to say for sure you have Tosefes, and you say that itself is a Tevet Din. So if you can have Yom Kippur early, so how come we can't have Rosh Hashanah early? So the truth is Rosh Hashanah is the original Yom HaDin, so Yom Kippur is less of the Yom HaDin than Rosh Hashanah is, as funny as it sounds. There's a lot one could question about that concept. It's not clear that anyone really holds this, because it's a view that Maharil quotes. Maharil himself is unclear what he thinks about it. And the latest far in don't really endorse it. Sifrei Sefer Frank has an essay about it, or Harfenis has the truth about it also, and they both agree that, using Rav Spangl's language, that you should still do Tosefes a little bit, to have a token Tosefes a few minutes, because that's still a din in that Torah they think applies to Rosh Hashanah also, and then, okay, so you'll dive in at the normal time, and that'll be something else. For some reason, the Maharil quotes that he himself questions it, that it's about the Kiddush and the meal, rather than davening, and there's what to try to figure out why there should be a difference. Let's just throw that in. So we've seen the difference between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Pesach, Shmini Atzeres, and Shavuos, and Sukkot. As we know, the Ramah quotes this idea that you should wait to eat on the first night of Sukkot also because of the Gzeir Shava between Sukkot and Pesach, which this year was very, very complex, because they're really different. Rabbanim gave different advice for the first night of Sukkot because there was a clash between two things you might want to fulfill. You should want to fulfill, because first night of Sukkot is an absolute key to eat in the Sukkot if it rains you're in trouble. And I think the forecast was that between the hour of 7 and 8 this year, when it would have been, you would have, there was a 90% chance of precipitation. And a few minutes before that, it was a 10%. So I think that was the information I got from the internet at the time. So if you're going to worry about the Ramaz Chumra, you run the risk of really losing your whole Suda. And the flip side, if you're matching it to Pesach, is that you can't go past Chatzos either again. So then you only have that zone. So either you wait and you run the risk of it pouring rain, or you compromise on that and you start a little bit earlier, which there was a big thought to do. So that's also a part of this whole quirk. So every Yontif has its own quirk. Each Yontif, no two Yom Tovim treated the same way, but all reflecting different aspects of this whole idea, this mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos. Shikach, thank you very much for this opportunity, and tremendous admiration of everybody who does this every day. It's really tremendously impressive. It's quite a thing.